Hello. A little apology. Due to a technical mishap, the little links between the extra beans, we can't use the original recordings. We have to use the Zoom backup, so it sounds a bit crap. But it's fine, ultimately. Enjoy!
Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello.
Thank you very much for signing up on the Patreon and getting this Extra Beans injection.
Yes, massive thank you.
And also thank us. Isn't it? For doing it.
It's a two-way street, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But basically what we're saying is, in terms of who thanks who, I think everyone, we can all thank each other.
We can all feel thanked and be thanked.
We can all, yes. Yeah.
And thank others.
Yeah.
It's a happy place to be.
Exactly. And in terms of the economics of it, the fact is it doesn't cost anything to be polite, does it?
So as you can hear, listeners, we keep all our best gear for the extra episodes.
No, I think what you meant to say is we smoke all our best gear before the Extra Beans episode.
He's talking about cannabis cigarettes there, I think. Oh.
Do be alert.
Camberwell sausage. Camberwell carrot.
Oh. The Doobie Files.
Doobie doo. With Mike, Ben, Henry, and Mary Jane. I would just like to make it clear that we don't smoke any substances.
We do not advocate the use of street drugs on this show.
No, correct.
We do, however, make a range of
date based legal highs.
Yes.
We're experimenting with a new form of spice as well.
Dr. Growl. is our latest, isn't it? It's going quite well.
Mm-hmm. That's made of fermented and boiled dog piss. Is that
that's right.
Now, you may remember that at the beginning of the month, we got our teeth into the top of the dentists.
Oh, Mike.
Yes.
It's so good working with a professional,
isn't it?
Someone who's just so professional.
Yeah. But much like the piece of spinach that gets lodged on one of your upper canines.
This is nice. This is nice stuff.
It's basically, let's just say what it is. It's like working with Havers, isn't it?
Yeah. Thank you.
Havers. Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre.
Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Nigel Havers.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster.
Top end monogrammed luggage.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Nigel.
He's a luxury prince.
Not all of the crud had been completely expunged. And here's that bit of spinach. Here's some extra beans from dentists. Yeah?
I wasn't sure about you calling our work crud.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, towards the end, I wasn't sure if we were the spinach, or is the extra content the spinach?
I don't think I was sure either. That might have been part of the problem. Content. I think the content was supposed to be the spinach.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? This is what I increasingly worry is what it's actually like working with Havers. Which is, it starts off, he's got the smooth voice, he's got the chinos, but actually...
It's all just veneer.
It's just veneer. And...
So the content is the spinach... The topic was the dentist, so that can't be us. And the podcast is the
listener is the esophagus.
They're the esophagus, or maybe this patron thing is a sort of an abnormal pharyngeal pouch that a food bolus has got caught in. It's causing quite foul breath, and may even need surgical correction at some point.
And of course, what we do in our conversations is hold up a mirror, a tiny mirror, to society.
Thanks. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
I actually went to the New Forest once. Twice. It's very nice, isn't it?
It's very nice.
I couldn't believe it. I was driving through the New Forest.
It's not a million years away from where I grew up.
Oh, is it not? No. Portsmouth, isn't it? Yeah.
Sort of between Portsmouth and Southampton.
Ponies?
So many ponies.
Wild ponies, mate.
Not only have they got wild ponies, Ben. I was driving through the New Forest once. I couldn't believe what was going on around me. They have got hogs, yeah? Giant hogs. Wild giant hogs. Mm-hmm. Who slowly walk up and down the roadside. Okay, and you stop the car.
And they sell you, like, sunglasses and
wash your car. Stuff.
Yeah. Key rings with pictures of Mike Wozniak on. And you stop the car. Well, you pull in a garage. You buy either, the nearest thing they've got to a BAP, or maybe some Warburton's, Warburton's bagels. Mm-hmm. You go up to the pig, to the hog, and you try and just get it into a BAP, obviously. And you approach it with the two halves of the
bagel. It's a great workout.
It's a great workout. No, but they're so cute. It's incredibly sweet to see a large hog snuffling around, right? And then what you do is you Google, what are they doing? And you thought it couldn't get any more adorable. And then you find out what they're doing.
Looking for acorns.
They're looking for acorns, which is just...
Yeah, that's so whimsical and wonderful.
It's so adorable, looking for acorns. You're like, I wish I want to... You know what? If I could take you home with me, you big hog, I wouldn't, because... It would be one of those things where you think...
acorns.
I've got acorns. And it's one of those things where you think it'd be lovely to have the hog in the car, take the hog home, and then the hog, it would start.
One road tragedy later.
How fast do you reckon on, after putting a hog in your car and trying to take it home, would it all go wrong?
I don't think you'd get into second gear, frankly.
Daddy, can we please take the hog? Oh, of course, I can't say... Daddy, can we please take the hog in the car? Of course we can. You're the golden child. Just ring the gong and the hog is yours. You know how it works. Gong!
The golden child was wrong!
He's shitting on the zines! He's shitting on the zines!
Nothing to see but an abandoned Hyundai i10 in the New Forest with blood-spattered windows on the inside.
I know that nature's red in tooth and claw and you can't control these things, but for come on, literally, within 5 seconds, he's defecating in the car. I mean, have some manners.
He's eating the bloody gear stick.
And suddenly I'm looking at the hog in the rearview mirror and he just isn't cute anymore. He's actually disgusting. A hog, when it's in your own car, a hog is suddenly... utterly disgusting.
Swallowing your left arm whole. Yeah. Takes the edge off the magic.
And so many teats. How many teats does one hog need? I do have an unerupted wisdom tooth. Bottom left, rear bottom left. That's my left because it's
stage left.
Is it stage left with teeth, Mike?
Or is it camera left?
Is it camera left with teeth? I think it's my left, isn't it? Because actually the teeth are set up. If you look at it, it's like they're set up very much like theatre seating, aren't they? So if you see the teeth as the audience.
I think it's up to you. I think hang on to that left because that's one of the few lefts that doesn't change.
It is front jaw left.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what direction you're looking in, it's still on the left.
God, it's still left, isn't it?
It's a great bit of news for you there, Henry.
So I've got a front... So bottom rear... left, unerupted wisdom tooth, needs to be removed.
And that'll be live-streamed on the Patreon, won't it?
That'll be live-streamed on the Patreon.
A new dear listener could win the chance to yank out Henry Packer's unerupted wisdom tooth.
Give the third and final yank. It's going to have to be the final one, so you're going to have to really put some elbow grease into it.
I think I've got four of those, Henry, unerupted wisdom teeth.
Really?
Pointing the wrong way, yeah. And basically, it's like having... a grenade in your face that you know is going to go off at some point.
Yeah.
But I'm just waiting for it to happen.
Which does add a lot of suspense to life, doesn't it? There's never a dull moment when you've got four grenades in
your... Well, you could be self-fragged at any point.
Yeah. That's an old law of screenwriting, isn't it? Which is how do you make a scene interesting? Put four grenades in one of the characters' mouths. and the scene
Kafka's wisdom too.
That's how mustard does it, isn't it? That's why, despite the fact that mustard is, by any objective measure, disgusting, it's still something that, to this very day, I mean, even yesterday, even yesterday, I put mustard in a sandwich, knowing that the mustard would make me react by going, ooh, every time I bit into it. Mm-hmm. But that's how deep mustard is.
You're on the Kerrigan's mustard coin now, so.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, exactly.
Got to represent.
And what I'm talking about is how this mustard is literally ingrained.
Very good.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mustard is such a toxic product that they have to give you a free jar with each... with each
ladle sort of. Yeah, because they used to just spoon the ladle out into your bare hands, didn't they? It got stopped in the 70s.
It's clearly a product that should be slopped into your bare hands from a prison ladle. From a gulag ladle.
Into your ragged, filthy hands.
Yeah, it's a punishment food. Mm-hmm. But they've completely rebadged it. They've given you a free jar. So you think to yourself, well, my mouth's going to get a harsh slap.
I had that experience this weekend, right? I cooked up two pork knuckles on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. You use the word knuckle there, didn't you? What do you mean? Because I've never high-fived a pig. I don't know about you. I mean, what are we talking when we say knuckle there?
Ben's got a small clutch of retired featherweight boars in his back garden.
I know he does, but I want to know what makes them tick. Because I've never seen a hog or a boar doing a Rubik's cube.
You use knuckles for that, do you? Doesn't slow you down?
I do. It's how you get your speed now. You get your speed up higher. You get it as deep into the hand as you can. No, because I'm always interested by that term knuckle. Because does that actually mean? Is it like a joint between the knee and the trotter?
That would be a shin, wouldn't it? Hog shin. That's next weekend.
You're moving up, aren't you? From the knuckle up.
I think we might have had this conversation before on the podcast, incredibly.
Could be.
B, I still don't know.
And can I add a C to that?
Yeah.
Which is, I think we can stop mentioning when we've already mentioned stuff on the podcast. I think we have come full circle. We actually did probably about halfway through season one. We've come full circle. It's now just a kind of, it's repeated iterations of the same concepts spiraling inwards to a kind of...
Rehashed beans.
Rehashed beans.
Refried beans.
Mm-hmm. Refried beans.
I don't know is the answer.
Because people will say things like, a hoof is actually the horse's equivalent of a toenail.
I think a pork knuckle is the pig's equivalent of a knuckle. It's a knuckle.
But how can you have a knuckle without fingers?
Oh my God. They've cracked it.
I think they just end at the knuckle. Do you know what I mean? Different animals end at different points.
The thin
snakes,
end of the knuckle.
Snakes end at the hip. There's no legs. Pigs go a bit further. They go quite a lot further, but they end at the knuckle.
How about crabs?
They end at the knee.
So everything is the same jointed... Everything is essentially an arm.
Mm. With a head on the end.
So the human has the full arm, and everything else is just version... is just gets a certain...
Well, we arrogantly assume we have the full arm, but I assume that there's something that goes beyond the tips of the fingers.
The pincer.
There we go. You're right.
Well, the crab is the nearest thing to a sort of self-sufficient, autonomous hand, isn't it?
Can eat itself essentially its own sandwich.
Yeah. You know, there's a theory.
It's its theory, own packed lunch.
It's the full deal. He packed a packed lunch this morning, darling. What are you talking about? I'm a crab. You might as well ask me if I packed me. Where do you work again? Under that rock. Bye. So, yeah, that's what a crab is, isn't it? Because there is a theory, isn't there, that scientists have proven that when you reach, when you reach over to pick up a cup of tea or whatever, scientists have proven that the speed with which that thought goes from your brain to your fingers is too quick. It can't be done. The only explanation is
it actually reaches the cup of tea after you've picked the cup of tea up.
Exactly. So essentially, your brain is using retrospect to go, you know what, I wanted a cup of tea just then. Honestly, I did, honestly. Honestly. Whereas actually, no.
Your arm is constantly second-guessing your brain, you're saying?
Well, are you saying that we're basically entirely creatures of instinct, like a crab? We're basically running from our spine more than anything else. And our brain's just tricking us into thinking that it's doing it, but it's actually spine. Spine world. Spine thoughts.
Yes. All of that, yeah.
Well, the theory I've heard is that your fingers are actually must be the ones having the idea. So it's your fingers that want to pick up the cup of tea.
No.
And so your brain is going... And your brain is just this kind of straw man or Wizard of Oz figure who's just like a big spongy... I think it's just like a big sponge that happens to be at the top of your head behind your eyes, so we've assumed it's important. And it's just this sort of like... It's like a sort of fat Victorian gentleman going, oh, yes, that was my idea. Oh, yes, that was me. That was me again. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to pick up a cup of tea. Yeah, totally. Whereas actually, it's the fingers right there at the coal face, at the hard end of thing, the business end.
Just getting on
your fingers. They're the ones actually calling the shots and making things happen.
Getting the tea and typing the emails.
Yeah, and that would explain why crabs, which are, you know, structurally identical to a hand. So imagine your hand and just put an eyeball on the top of the two middle fingers. And imagine the other three fingers, the two fingers and the thumb just scuttling around his legs. So what you've got there, that's why the crab is potentially the perfect being. Wow. If you've got zero...
No Victorian gentleman.
No Victorian gentleman. So you've got no one claiming work they haven't done. It
ends at the wrist. So everything beyond the wrist is superfluous.
So humans are essentially two crabs convincing itself that it's a person.
Yeah, the two crabs that are stuck that just happen to still be stuck on arms that are attached to her,
just biding their time
to a head sponge.
It's a good theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think our PhD level listeners are going to have a hard time disproving that as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, as Henry said, scientists have proven some of the things that he said.
Yes. Exactly. So anyway, what's the point there?
I think I was saying that I was cooking up some pork knuckles.
Oh, yes.
And I had some mustard for the first time in like a long time, maybe 6 months.
Oh, yes, mustard.
Mm. And I'd forgotten you just have to have a tiny amount of it.
Yeah, otherwise it's warfare on your own nose.
My first mouthful, I treated it like sort of ketchup.
What were we talking? A Dijon? An English
It was mustard? A Dijon. It was an, a Dijon. It was a little Dijon.
Mm-hmm.
I smothered the,
that's
the knuckle
the wrong,
meat with
that's
it.
That's the wrong verb to be using with mustard, Ben. You shouldn't be smothering. You should be, just delicately.
A dab, maybe. Start with a
dabbing.
Dab after a long break.
Dabbing.
Also, guys, this might be a bit much for the podcast, but...
Mm.
I ate so much knuckle meat on the weekend,
which is quite hard to do. Got to put a lot of work in.
Because it's mainly bone, isn't it? Mm. I'd have thought.
Gristle.
Mainly bone and cartilage.
On Monday morning, I had a piss that smelled like ham. If anyone can email in and let me know if I'm okay, sort of kidneys-wise, that would be good.
And also, any of those story doctors, what would that be the inciting incident for? What story would that be? Where the thing which breaks you out of the mold that you're stuck in as a character who's stuck in a rut in some way. The day their piss smells of ham, what journey does that send them on?
It's a call to arms of sorts, a call to ham.
Also, Ben, it must have really smelled of ham, because what I find is that smells very much work. I'd say like 70 to 80% of smell is context, isn't it? Which is...
And 10% is taste.
No, I know what you mean, Henry. Yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting ham.
Is it might be... You're saying it could be because of Ben's new pork chop toilet seat? It's a simple mistake that any of us could make.
Ben, you've gone fully meat with all your white goods made of meat now, aren't you?
Yeah. And you've got that lovely crackling bog roll as well, haven't you? It's tough on your ear, but it's surprisingly effective.
Oh,
I think because of all the little hairs.
It's how our forefathers did it, Mike. What's happening? 80% of smell is context, isn't it? That's why the smell game works, which is when you take you meet someone, you tie them up, you blindfold them, and you feed them crisps, and you say, "What is that?" And often they won't know. Often they won't know what's happening.
This is just a rainy weekend, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's just, what are you going to do? Got to make your own fun. And they won't know that it's crisps, even though it's quite obvious that it's crisps, you'd have thought, because they can't see that it's crisps. You know that game, don't you?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Yeah. So for it to have smelt of ham in such a non-hammy context, it must have really smelt of ham, is the point I'm
making. Yeah, it must have really reeked of ham.
Because I would have smelt and gone, I must have some sort of flesh infection.
Let's not rule that out, Henry. Let's not rule that out.
I've gone for the nearest explicable cause.
You're being eaten away from the inside.
Yeah.
By a brand new virus.
Yeah. Bloody internal termites again. Unbelievable.
I don't think I've ever eaten crab, you know.
Oh, God, no. Ben.
Yeah.
No, rubbish. Surely.
I just never have.
You've never had a crab sandwich as a sort of summertime treat?
No. I think maybe this year needs to be, it's time for my first crab.
I think crab's great.
Yeah. What's the best way for me to do, what's my best sort of way into crab?
Find yourself a salty beach hut somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
When the summer comes. That's got a reputation for a damn fine crab sandwich. Get yourself a plate of crab sandwich and chips.
Bear in mind, Mike, that in recent years, raw sewage has been pouring into the sea around the coast of Britain.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true, but that's not going to stop us.
It's also full of whale shit, octopus piss, and everything else you can imagine. Honestly, so everyone should chill out about that kind of thing.
Well, that's true. The South has had been hardest hit, maybe, lately. Maybe you're hitting the Highlands. Maybe you're going...
Whitby crab? Mm-hmm. Is that a thing?
Guess there's bound to be Whitby crab. There's got to be. Head north. I haven't heard quite so much effluent hitting the north lately.
Is that right? Okay.
I once had a crab burger.
That sounds good.
But it was a bit like... it was just in a fairly sort of standard sort of pub. But when I got it felt like one of those, like, it felt like the most really, like, really kind of oligarch level, slightly evil snack food, because it was literally an entire deep fried crab, like fully in the shell. It was just like a crab in the burger. Just picture a crab. That's what it was, the whole crab.
So it wasn't really a burger at all?
No, it did have a bun on each side. Right. It had a couple of bun halves going on.
The crab had accidentally walked into a bun.
That's what it felt like.
It had been served.
But it was just a full crab. But very soft shell crab, I think it's called, yeah.
Yes, I've been in a Chinese restaurant and watched my girlfriend eat a soft shell crab, and the whole thing made me feel quite queasy. And I didn't like the idea of a soft shell crab either.
I know what you mean. Feels like that crab never had a chance. It feels like it's not a fair game and you're taking on the soft shell crabs. Give them a break.
So Ben writes in from Tijuana.
Ooh.
Mexico.
Yeah, I think so. Dear Beans, your first episode of the new season, Zeppelins, left me feeling unsettled and uneasy. Mm-mm. I've been trying to ignore the nagging dread for weeks now, but have been unable to move on mentally. Henry started a story about his missing buttons and a dry cleaner. Mm. But in a flurry of digressions that followed, including battery hand and the good old kettle o' piss, we never actually heard the end of the story. It sounded like he was heading for something very mundane, but...
that's the promise I make to the listener with my anecdotes, isn't it?
But nevertheless, the lack of resolution left myself and probably many other listeners in a very uncomfortable low-grade suspense that has been eating away at the back of my mind. I'm pleading
damn
with Henry...
The squib setup does that in particular, I think.
Yes. My stories are very much like the low hum of a refrigerator in the background, which is that... It's almost when I turn it off, it's that you go,
oh,
you know what I mean? That's better.
Sorry, I've been really crotchety for days. Yeah.
But it's almost like when I stop halfway through, people will go, hang on a minute. Someone was telling us an anecdote. I've just noticed now that it's stopped, but that was an anecdote.
I thought we had a broken fridge.
It's
a real relief. I've lost the warranty. I don't know where I put that.
Oh, that means there's a very good chance that my pioneering meat trifle hasn't spoiled.
So he's written, I am pleading with Henry to tell us the ending of his story to release us from this hell and to try and avoid leaving open ends like this in the future that will inevitably torture your more neurotic listeners who just need some rest. Regretfully yours, Ben from Tijuana.
I don't think the latter is a promise Henry can or should make.
What was that again?
That you won't leave any more open ends.
Yeah.
No, that I can't make that promise, but I can give. I think I can give give some closure here. You know what? Some of my some of my anecdotes are so, in a way, I don't want to use the word boring. I'm going to use the word subtle. But often there are events in my life that weren't even that memorable to me. And so sometimes I will actually forget what happened in my own anecdote. But, oh, that was it. I was getting some buttons. Bloody hell. Is that really the kind of thing I talk about?
Yeah.
I was getting some buttons fixed. He fixed the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get as far as that bit last time?
No. I think you were planning on taking it to the dry cleaners, and that's as far as you got.
So what happened was I took it to a dry cleaner, and essentially he fixed my buttons off book. It was an entre-nous, unofficial black market button botch up, it turned out, because one of them didn't stay on.
And you had no recourse legally, did you?
I had absolutely no recourse, and... Of course, it was too good to be true. Ben from Tijuana, it was too good to be true. I thought I'd solve this problem, which is doing the buttons off book. I'm circling around back on some of the stuff from the anecdote again. I'm hoping if I give it a second pass, something. Oh, he didn't give me a small ticket for it. It was cash in hand, and. I tell you what, I thought this is sort... In fact, when I told the anecdote initially, I thought it had a happy ending, which is brilliant. I've got an off-book, unofficial guy who'll fix my buttons when they fall off. I think it was £2 a button, which is a pretty good deal, I think. Don't know how you measure these things. But then, I think by the time I got home, either one of them had fallen off or the other one was already off and I'd forgotten to ask... I obviously it was left right sleeves. I had no way of remembering which one was I'd gone in with in the first place.
And had you gone back, he wouldn't be there anyway, and the whole place is now shut. And
yeah,
it's just an empty room.
Yeah, and he's off setting that £8 against the cost of hiring that dry cleaners for the day. But
there you go, Ben, a parable for our times.
Yeah.
Yep. Can I also say that
something else did happen there as well with the jumper, but I haven't got time to talk about it.
Oh no, you've set up a whole other one.
It's exactly what he was asking you not to do.
I also basically asked him if he could fix a moth hole in a jumper I had, and also the collar detail on this jumper, the collar detail had come off. Well, had partially come off.
You were basically ragged when you walked in there.
And I asked him to fit, you know, the round bit at the top of a jumper that goes around the head hole, the neck hole. Yeah, that was a different colour from the rest of the jumper, so it was a collar detail that come off partly. I asked him to fix it. I went back, and he basically it was no longer symmetrical. The collar thing. God,
yeah. This is incredibly mundane.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but I'm just hoping the stakes raise at some point. But they might not.
Well, I think we'll put that to bed. I'm just going to mention one thing before we finish this section.
Okay.
Well, is that it doesn't sound like Henry was going to a dry cleaners at all. Possibly a McDonald's.
before you finish this now regular section. Yeah. Carry
on. Well, I was reading the comments that people left on Patreon a while ago, and there's another hanging story that exists in our...
Hanging thread, as it were.
Yeah. But from series ago, and I don't think you should address it now, but I'm just going to raise it again. There was a story that started with you pissing on a glove in a urinal.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, that's huge, that story. I mean, the ending of that story is unbelievable. The amount of things that flit into place when you find out what happened to the glove.
Yeah, well, that's. Well, I'm just going to leave that hanging. Just to set it up.
They say that those who can't teach, those who can't teach, teach gym. And those who can't even teach gym, podcast. Here's us talking about teachers. There was
There was a guy called Mark. We had a supply teacher called Mark who came in once.
Amazing that he let you know his first name. That's his first mistake, right?
Yeah, it sounds dangerous.
No, but this was because I went to a slightly alternate school.
It was a boys' school, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a boys' school, yeah. But it was sort of slightly alternate and cool. So, but it also wasn't. So it was like, right. It was trying to be a bit of both. It was like, it was a uniform, it was tie. It was a tie's jacket, but you could wear jeans. So you basically ended up dressing like a middle-aged tosser.
Dressing like sort of Jeremy Clarkson.
Basically Clarkson. The look was Clarkson.
City boy at a weekend sort of barbecue, cocktail party type dress.
Yeah, exactly. So that was what we all wore. And it was first names of the teacher. So it was Bernie, Roger.
Oh, that's weird.
Gerard was the French teacher. but it was also kind of highly academic, but also was trying to pretend to be kind of cool as well. But it was, I don't know, it was a weird place. But Mark, he was the replacement French teacher that came in. And he came in. And you know that thing that kids do of just sort of looking for that weakness, sensing the, just like so alert to the weakness. And he came in and we were looking for the weakness. His cheeks were a little red, but they weren't too red, quite red. Probably normal amount of redness. Bide your time, Henry. The weakness will show itself. Wait for the true weakness. He's wearing specs. But wait, there may be a deeper fissure that we can exploit. And we weren't sure what it was. And then he turned to the blackboard and started writing.
And he had a tail.
He had a big, floppy Labrador's tail. And we were in.
We're going to take the wag out of that by the end of the day.
So you got a Labrador's ass, hey? And then it just started, went from there.
Dog ass, dog ass.
Dog ass, dog ass. No, and then he started writing on the board. And essentially, his handwriting was slightly bigger than average handwriting. And it's like, you're done, mate.
Oh, Mark.
But the three of us must have done some teaching. I've done sort of not high school teaching, but I've done a bit of tutoring. I'm trying to think what are the teaching experiences I've...
I don't think I've ever taught anyone anything. What have you taught?
I tutored a kid with his history studies when he was doing his GCSEs.
How the hell did you do that? How did you know about history? How did you do that? What was the topic? Which history was it?
It was Hitler, mainly.
Yeah, it was Hitler? Did you teach Hitler to someone?
I taught Hitler.
I mean, how were you able to do that? Did you have to research it and stuff?
Well,
I couldn't teach someone about World War II. I don't know enough about it. Don't you have to be an expert?
To a 14-year-old?
Well, do you just give them the general picture, do you?
But there was an element of history in your degree, wasn't there, Ben?
Yes, there was.
But even so, I couldn't teach anything. There's no way. I'm sort of waiting for the... Of course you could! But I think you cut out. You must have cut out there. What have you taught, Mike? Have you taught things?
I don't think I've done anything other than, very informally, really. And again, I don't know what that would be. Certainly now, I don't know what on earth that could possibly be that I could impart on anyone else. There's that phrase, isn't there? There's, you could always go into teaching. I mean, no, because what? Teach what? How?
Thing is, what Mike has got, you can't teach that, can you? What Mike's got.
Exactly.
You can't teach it.
But it's not a backstop, is it? It's a profession in its own right, and I don't... Yeah.
By the way, at some point, I'm going to have to... And now it's time for... Pompidou section. Pompidou. By the way, at some point, I'm going to have to...
Digestive tract talk. Oh, yeah.
By the way, at some point, I'm going to have to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Put your hand up.
Excuse me.
Act your age, not your shoe size. That's what Mr. Slack said to me. I don't feel the urge to change his name. In orchestra practice in primary school, he wouldn't.
So, how old were you at the time?
8.
And what shoe size were you?
Oh, good question.
He's playing quite a. It's quite a dangerous game he's playing. He's not that far off, is it, at that point?
Yeah, exactly. Probably 5, maybe. You know,
when you're dealing with children, their age is quite close to their shoe size.
Probably a size 5. Yeah. And he persisted with that line throughout orchestra practice. I should have gone for a wee before orchestra practice, of course. I knew that, but I hadn't. He didn't let me. And lo and behold.
I pissed in my trousers.
Good stuff.
In quite sort of quite buckety seats as well. So I was sat in a sort of pool of my own urine. And even then it took a while for him to let me go. But by that time, the ship had sailed.
That's one of those moments in life where you almost go, at the time, you almost know, yep, this is going to be with me forever. This is the trouser piss incident.
This is a long haul one. I've got a feeling I'm not going to be treated sympathetically by my peers about this.
This is personality shaping stuff.
Yeah. It was the brass section that moved first. Bastards. It's always the brass.
Moved into to ridicule.
To attack. Yeah.
What do you want to do there? You want to cleave hard.
A couple of sympathetic glances from the woodwind section.
Yes, I was about to say you want to cleave hard to the sympathetic bassoonist or oboist.
Yeah, and ostracised by the rest of the strings.
And for the love of God, don't look towards the percussion, the guy with all the percussionist bits and bobs, because he's going to absolutely mince you. You know, the guy with all the bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Piss trouser twat.
Oh, yeah, the old percussion swanny whistle.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to go and do your...
Yes, I'm just having a flashback to... Can I go to the toilet, sir?
Yes.
I think you can. I hope you can go to the toilet, Packer. I think the real question is, may you go to the toilet, Packer? Anyway, so you've decided to do it on my shoes. Fair enough.
I feel like I've been quite negative about teachers. I want to say that the flip side of that coin is good teachers. Many of my teachers are very good, I think. And I still sort of think about them occasionally. And
the good teachers, there's I think one in particular maybe, who are absolutely idolised, and I think probably still do slightly. Did you have...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good time.
I remember he once looked at me in the eyes and said...
He said, Henry, you will one day be an admiral.
And there's still time, isn't there?
There's still time.
First Sea Lord Packer.
Henry, you are going to take this once great nation by the scruff of its neck and take it back where it belongs, onto the oceans, around the Cape of Good Hope, back through the Suez Canal, up to the Mediterranean, around Sicily, and back home again. Plunder and treasure.
And oranges by the gallon.
Rotting oranges.
And spices, Henry. You can bring cumin seeds. What are the other ones? Five spice.
Peri peri seasoning packets. Bring me mixed herbs.
Oregano. Thyme.
Tarragon.
Bring me Levi roots. Reggae reggae sauce.
Bring me the herbs de Provence.
And Mediterranean herb mix. Bring those things direct from the East and cut Schwartz out. Out of the spice industry. And then Britain will once again rule this great orb. Did you ever have... The classic thing is running into a teacher outside of school, isn't it? That's a...
Yes. I remember once running into a teacher who was on a date.
Ooh.
With a fancy man. And it was so embarrassing for everyone involved. Just, yeah.
That's crushing. Were they at the beginning of the end of the date?
They were going into the cinema.
Were you going to the same cinema?
I think I was also on a sort of teenage date to the cinema.
Oh, Lord.
So
oh,
just
God.
Embarrassment in sort of every direction, basically.
Everyone's mind on one thing, and it ain't the movie.
I was looking forward to seeing Titanic, Mike. So...
Were you thinking...
Did you suggest a double? Did you suggest doubling up?
Yeah, exactly. I can imagine...
To hit the arcade together afterwards.
Go to Bella Italia together.
I can imagine you regretting the words as you're saying them, but unable to stop. Shall we all just meet up afterwards and grab a bowl of carbonara? Why am I saying this?
Have you heard about the stuffed crust they're doing at Pizza Hut?
No, why?
Sorry, Mrs. Withington.
Henry, even if I had said that, there's no way that two people in there... early 30s would have said yes.
Yeah, that's true.
And gone on a double date with two 15-year-olds.
Well, you never know. Social pressure is a powerful thing.
I think from memory, thankfully, we ended up going to see different films because that would have been awful.
Yeah, I suppose if you're a teacher going on a cinema date on the weekend, you've got to at least choose something. It's got to be the mind-numbingly dull, bleak, subtitled art piece, hasn't it? Otherwise, you're not going to see Dungeons & Dragons, even though that's what you want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Super Mario.
Because it's going to be chock-a-block with Year 10C or whatever.
I think it is quite... My sister's a teacher and a primary school teacher. And I think she's quite careful, like, not to go to the pub, for example, near her school.
Yeah.
Because she'll just run into parents and, like...
Shame, isn't it?
There's a kind of weird relationship. And I don't think she kind of doesn't like it.
Another reason why classrooms should have that wings section. Yeah. So you put on your fake nose.
Yeah, she's got that series of wigs and false noses, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
world class collection of goatees.
Yeah, and maybe that's cheeks that fan out like that dinosaur in Jurassic Park.
Just in case one of them comes too close in the open air.
I'm just remembering. I once another teacher outside school thing was I once my it was like half term or with Easter holidays or something, and my friend's mum used to go to a quite posh gym. I think it was like a racket club type place, you know, kind of quite posh.
Yeah. Preppy
sports center, and because it was the whole day, she took us with her, and we were just going to go to the pool bit, and there was a jacuzzi, and I got in the jacuzzi, and my geography teacher was in the jacuzzi.
Horror of horrors.
Absolutely horrifying.
A geogra-coozy. that's the worst. Were you having to make comments like, huh, tell you what, these bubbles going on at a crack are probably a bit like what happens in a certain volcanic if a volcano erupts underwater, isn't it? Have you ever gone back?
No, never.
Going back is it's not always a good idea.
Have you?
I've been back once or twice to a couple of my schools, have reunions every now and then, but not for years, to be honest. I didn't like it.
A few years ago, somebody on Facebook added me to a group, which was that there was going to be a reunion of our class, and I couldn't leave that group fast enough.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed school, to be honest, and I had a nice time, you know, in general. But even then, just the idea of revisiting all that, I don't know, I couldn't do it.
They still send me a magazine every now and again, every quarter or something.
Wow.
There's a school magazine.
Yeah, I get school magazine.
And just doesn't matter how many times I move house, they track me down.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite extraordinary, actually.
Yeah.
They will always find you with sort of hockey results for some children that, you know, weren't even born when you were there.
Yeah.
But that's because they hope you're going to bequeath your entire wealth upon your death, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I get a lot of calls, and I how many times do I have to tell you? Look, I've sort of gone into the arts. I haven't really
necessarily.
I'm not going to bequeath. I'm not in a position to bequeath at the moment.
For work, I'm currently recording a podcast from a room in my parents' house. Just to illustrate,
yes, it's not really. Yeah, it's not bequeath territory. I've chosen a different path. It's not about enjoying the process of what I'm doing.
No, I get phone calls from my former university. And they just say, you know, would you consider donating money? And then the answer is just like, of course not. Why on earth would I do that? It'd be like if my local branch of Tesco Express rang me and said, would you like to donate? I'd say no.
Good point. The other teacher, of course, who can inspire one in life, well, the other sort of archetypical...
Is Jesus.
Who, in a way, was... A multidisciplinary, more of a sort of primary school teacher, wasn't he? He did all the subjects.
Wasn't hot on physics.
Not hot on physics.
Very hot on physics. Walked on water, mate.
Oh, yeah.
That's super physics.
I suppose he was RE, wasn't he?
Sorry, what were you going to say, Henry?
Well, the other archetypical type of teacher thing is the teacher who went, you'll never amount to anything. Which fires that spark in you. And
or sometimes is judged just right.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like, yeah, bang on.
I did have a feeling, you know.
Yeah.
I had a feeling. I wasn't quite sure what that feeling was, but now you've articulated it.
Hats off.
Yeah. I feel that coming.
Now, at the end, we you may remember we did an episode earlier in the month about a certain type of TV show, and I certainly think it would be a crime not to hear more about that topic. It would be a crime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, because it was TV crime shows?
It was TV crime shows.
TV crime shows.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
That was. That's quite slick, isn't it? That's quite good.
That's quite nicely done.
I think actually I'm right in saying that in the episode we barely talked about TV crime shows.
We do hear quite a lot, I think. In this
bit. What do you mean?
I think in this bit.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, I think in the Patreon section we actually talk about TV crime shows.
They're actually getting the topic. You lucky devils.
Yeah.
which for my money is an absolutely classic topic. It's a topic in my private life. I could talk about all the live long day, frankly.
So for people that are subscribed to your OnlyFans,
yeah,
you can
get a lot of that stuff anyway. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You'll talk about Morse,
blow by blow, clue by clue. Morse, Wexford, May Gray.
And just you talking about those things, just wearing only a murder weapon,
which the listeners nominate. Yeah,
that's right. So sometimes it'll be truncheon. So,
yeah, last night it was just a spanner. I was just wearing a spanner. Which is a bit of a strong flavour for some people's taste.
Time,
but,
you got once, didn't? Yeah.
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 Time's the biggest killer.
Time's the biggest killer.
Yeah. Unless you're a lobster immortal.
I've had that kind of time. I've also had time the herb as well because of a sort of allergy case. That was a bit less appealing.
So you had a sort of bouquet garnet.
Yeah.
Covering the
crucials, unless you went to the premium. Right. In which case it covered everything else.
Right, TV detectives.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, okay. TV crime shows.
Mm. TV crime shows.
So what are the kinds you've got? You've got detective show.
Yeah.
Featuring detective with a flaw.
Yeah. But genius levels of ability.
Can I just quickly say, on the topic of that one, Ben, that type, I saw a thing the other day on the internet where it was saying something like, amazing series or TV show Endeavour comes to its final episode or something. And I thought, oh, Endeavour, you know, like sometimes you think, oh, there's a TV show, there's one I haven't heard of yet. You know, there's like a box set or it's just something something on a streamer that's Endeavour. And I thought, oh, that sounds like it might be really good. Brilliant. You know, there's one I have. I'll watch Endeavour. And I thought Endeavour, it's probably about explorers or something.
Oh.
Endeavour sounded quite cool. And I looked at it and I found it and I thought, it's a fucking sequel to Morse. I couldn't give less of a toss. Yeah. But at the same time, I had the same thought, but this would be manna from heaven to Mike.
No, I've tried. I can't. Well, I'm
really?
Morse, I hold Morse in two highest. Morse is, for me, is like the ultimate benchmark, top drawer. Can't be better.
Endeavour didn't.
Morse is one of the rare ones where I've even read a bunch of the books and seen. Do you know what I mean?
So
the books are quite. They're a bit. They've got a bit of humour in them.
Oh, that sounds very good.
A little bit of wry humour.
Can you do us a little impression of the kind of laugh that you'll do to one of those wry jokes, please? Yeah.
Do you never finish it off with it? Do you never do this?
Very good.
Oh, of course. Yeah, if I'm in a public place.
Yeah. And if people have ignored that repeatedly on the train or wherever, then I might push it to a pah! But very rarely.
So occasionally
it's a bit showy.
Almost overpowers you. Almost.
It's a bit showy.
Like. Also, do you do the thing? It's quite hard to demonstrate this in an audio medium, but do you do the thing where, say, if you're in a train carriage, you'll go and then sort of look around the carriage at the other people in their eyes as if, yes. Yeah. Yeah, somehow sort of bring them in or sort of somehow into your experience that you're having, looking around. Yes. So right, but same time dark because there's a murder in it. But there's still room for humour. There's laughter in the dark. Yes. And also the criminals, they go down. Yeah, they go down. They do their time. You do the crime, you do the bloody time. Yeah.
Oh, there's justice. There's always justice in a Morse.
Do the crime, you do.
Yeah.
Laughter and tears, isn't it? Both sides.
So is Morse based on books or is it original TV?
Yeah, the Colin Dexter books.
Is that the name of the writer? Is it Colin Dexter?
That's him. But that's the gold standard for me, Morse. I'm an easy sell, to be honest, when it comes to a crime show, police procedural, what have you. I'm easy prey.
So we're going through the type. Sorry, we're still on the first type, aren't we, Ben, which is this one. What is this type, Morse?
There's subtypes, isn't there? So with the detective one, Morse falls into, I think someone who likes Morse could say the following thing, which is the kind of thing that would make my skin crawl, which is, it's just so British, isn't it?
Oh.
It's so British. And there's like a subset of detective TV shows, which are like really pushing how British they are. Like, so Midsummer Murders.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get my guess as to one of the things that's British about them is that people get murdered, but no one makes a big fuss about it. People say things like, they'll say things like, yes, my mother was murdered 2 hours ago. That's right. I've come to report her death. I quite liked her. That's the level of emotion. Where in America, it's like, you killed a goddamn mum. That, isn't it? That's going to be the emotional response.
No one's kicking a door in a Morse, ever.
No.
She never got to finish the Victoria sponge I made her.
Exactly. That's the arrest. That's the arrest scene, is that line. And then a slight sagging, a drooping of the shoulders. Yeah. She doesn't even need to be cuffed. She doesn't even need to be guided into the police car. She just knows. She solemnly walks in, goes without resistance.
To the hangman.
Because it's a parallel universe, isn't it, where there's still a hangman?
Oh, yeah.
In all the books you read, there's a parallel universe, but there's still a hangman. Everything's the same, but there's a hangman.
Well, Mike's actually created Morse, the hangman edition, where he's edited the final 5 minutes of every Morse episode. It finishes with Mike dressed all in black, hanging the...
And it's amazing what they can do now with the digital technology, because they can have the actor's head. It looks like it's the actor.
And in the early days, it was easy because you just got like a Hessian sack, just put that over a mannequin, and that was, easy peasy.
But now, Mike, the technology is such, isn't it? You've got a team.
You can make it look like Roger Allen.
You can make it look like Roger Allen. But what happens is it's cut from an earlier scene, so there'll be his head, and as he's hanging and dying, he'll just be saying some of his lines from one of the early scenes. He'll be saying something like, he'll be hanging and dying, but he'll be saying...
But he'll also be drinking a cappuccino.
He'll be drinking a cappuccino. Or perhaps tending to his mint plant, going, tell you what.
Yeah.
The leaves are a little bit dry this year. Must remember to give them more water and more frequently.
Or he's finishing a lecture on Proust to the undergraduates.
That's right. Yeah. Or he'll be saying, hello, Mr. Morse, come in. As you know, my sister died half an hour ago.
It is all very restrained, isn't it, those programmes? Like, people, you're right, people aren't gnashing of teeth and all that. It's just very...
It's buttoned up. It's buttoned up hard.
But that thing you said, Mike, about the no cuffing, I love that, because the arrest, there's no need for physical restraint often at the end. It'll almost be as if they do the last bit themselves, so that the detective will explain, and the detective will explain what happened.
Yeah.
And they'll say something like, which means those can't have been your gardening gloves.
Yeah, yes. And that's the moment that they know they're painted into a corner. And to deny it would be a monstrous absurdity. That would be too embarrassing. So no.
Yeah. And so what happens is all they do is they just stand up and they just gently walk. Well, can you walk gently?
Oh, yeah. Yes. These guys can,
These guys can. They're top actors. They gently walk towards the policeman, who'll then escort them out. And then everyone else, it's the family, close friends, other suspects who are in the room, all they do is they just return to playing Scrabble, Kaplunk, various board games.
And the villain, the culprit, they may even acknowledge, Morse or whoever it is, brilliance. There'll be some reference to a previous conversation, maybe literally, there'll be, oh, you were quite right. Wordsworth did have three balls. So that'll be anything they say.
That's right, yes.
It's the only way of acknowledging. Yes, you got me.
Yeah.
Ah, I see you saw my horse brasses. Take me down.
Touché.
Order's restored. No one's shouting.
Whereas in America, it's like, you're never going to fucking take me. Eat leg, bitch. And generally just almost everyone ends up dead.
Yeah, and there'll be like a rooftop chase, and they'll get on a train.
Even if it's like with a 96-year-old suspect, it'll still be. The Zimmer frame will just be adapted to be a flame.
Everyone's dead. There's an awful lot of damage to public property.
Yeah.
You'll probably see drinking and possibly drug use, sex work.
Yeah.
An
entire subway train will come up the stairs out into New York City and just start end up careering down Broadway.
Yeah. And then mug an old lady. On its way past.
And then explode.
Mm.
At gunpoint.
I like that in an American crime show where they know there's going to be the final reckoning with the police, whatever, and the police get there, and then they've rigged the whole room with explosives, and it's like, I'm taking you down and I'm going too.
And the other thing is, all American films, I think this is true of every single American film ever, ends with a scene where what happens is right at the end, you think you've got the person, and they go, yeah, but I've got your daughter. And they've got your daughter, and they've got the detective's daughter, and they've got a gun up against the detective's head. Yeah. Haven't they? I'm sorry, against the daughter's head.
The baddie's always got the daughter, got a gun against the head. And you think to yourself, God, how on earth are they going to solve this one? This is a nightmare. Unless he's really, really good at shooting. And then it's solved by someone being... But actually, quite clever, because I would never would have expected someone to be that good at shooting. How do they do it? Absolute genius, because they're so good at shooting, aren't they, at the end?
And sometimes they've also trained their daughter to tread on someone's toes at the right signal.
Yes.
Well.
Oh, well, that's another...
If they've got quite it's a sassy daughter.
Yeah.
With whom they've got a difficult relationship.
Well, had a difficult relationship, yes. Mike, until the bit where after he's done really good shooting, he shot the guy, guy's fallen over, him and the daughter are now planning to go to an ice cream parlour to discuss what's happened.
She's got over the potentially devastating trauma of seeing a man shot through his head. who's gripping blood, by the skull with a gun pressed to her own temple at the time.
But
very quickly.
But,
what do you think, kid? Raspberry Ripple?
Well, I mean, I look like I'm covered in raspberry ripple from all the gore from his head. I tell you what, I don't think the two skull fragment sprinkles down at the parlor, but got a few on the face.
Also, I've got very bad tinnitus. Is this normal? Will this go away? You just discharged a firearm inches from my face.
Next week on McStone.
Josh McStone. Guys, we've got to write Josh McStone.
We've got to.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday about how...
I just have to go and get myself a glass of water. Mm. Do you mind?
Do it.
Oh, what a power play. That's huge. Okay. I've just got to go and get myself a full roast dinner.
You know what? I've forgotten. I've actually got quite a lot of moisture in my mouth anyway. I'm going to carry on and stay here while you get your roast dinner, Ben.
Oh, well, it turns out I've actually got quite a lot of roast potatoes and meat in the back of my mouth already, so I'm just going to stay here while you get your glass of water.
I've got a bit of yoghurt on my trousers. I'll probably just pick that off and nibble it.
Oh, damn you. You've beaten me. I am going to have to go, but I'll be very, very quick.
What's he up to, Mike?
I don't know. I don't believe a word.
He doesn't normally do this. No. This has never happened before.
He's normally replete with a full sort of buffet table of snacks and drinks.
This means he's probably got through about at least 3 litres of liquid in the last half hour.
Probably going to appear behind you.
Sorry, guys.
No worries.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so TV crime show.
You were saying something,
So we've got, your British detective.
Yeah.
Then obviously the other kind is American police.
Which I think we've covered quite well.
So then what are the other kinds of crime shows? There must be another...
Italian, Galbano.
Yes.
Inspectore Galbano. That's what my parents are into that. They love it.
Oh yeah, a long time
ago. That's brilliant.
That's really good fun.
That's mafia, isn't it, sort of?
Yeah.
So there's the other type is when it's more about the crime family, right? The criminals, the Sopranos.
Yes.
Have you?
That's amazing.
Or The Wire, where it's both.
There's kind of no police at all in The Sopranos, are there? I don't think we really ever see police people involved.
No, you do, But they're bugging them and stuff sometimes, aren't they? Mm. You know, they put the bug in his lamp.
Oh, yes.
But they don't... add up to much in the end. They don't. Yeah, it's mainly about
I think on screen you see more like nice looking ham than you do policemen in The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Gabagool.
Budgetbadoobie. I got you some budgetbadoobies. Because that's what your Italian guy, he'll bring you some home cooked food.
The British love an amateur detective. Whether it's you know, magician's assistant or a reverend or a pair of gardeners or. You know, local busybody, whatever it is, or just the maiden aunt, you know, your Marple classic.
Yeah. But also, of course, in America, there's Murder, She Wrote, where she is not a policeman. She is a novelist.
She's a celebrated author.
Yeah.
With, I think, roughly 9,000 nieces, as far as I can tell.
Yes, that's a good point. That kind of detective who isn't a detective is quite a good... Because what's Monk? He's something, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know.
He's not a monk.
He's not a monk.
I think he's. I think he is a police officer, but I think he just isn't a gun-toting. He's more in the Columbo mold, the sort of academic.
I think he's like a forensics guy.
Is he? I've never seen that.
Well, what they've done is they've broken down, haven't they? So what's the topic again?
TV crime shows.
Yeah. they've broken down, haven't they, every element of the crime, and found a TV show in it. So, and I don't know if there's still ones they haven't found yet, but because you've got, like, you've got your autopsy TV crime shows, haven't you? Is that...
like CSI and stuff like that?
Yeah. And Silent Witness? Is
all that. Oh, Silent Witness, yeah.
And then CSI is all your forensics. But have you got The Police Artist?
Oh, the sketch
art. Is this the nose you're thinking of? But that's my nose. Damn you! You'll never take me alive! Your guns aren't working because I've stuffed them up with pens.
Oh my god, it's actually just fired the pens out. Really?
Ow, damn my really sharp rotary pens. Ow.
My partner's a huge fan of TV procedurals. Loves them.
Yeah.
Absolutely loves them. And she watches Law and Order Special Victims Unit. Oh, that's really? Her favourite one, which is an American one.
Mm.
It's incredible because it's a 100% plot.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no character work whatsoever. It's just, you did this. Where were you? You did that. We've arrested him. You said that, but we found this. You've done that. You found jail. Done. Mm. Over.
Everyone knows where they are. Everyone can relax.
It's really weird.
See, I think I like a bit of a cat and mouse action. Do you know what I mean? I think one of my favourites is Columbo for that very reason, yeah. You know. They get all the plot out of the way in the opening scene. It's done.
Well, Columbo is the one where you know who did it at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
You see them do it. So it's how he's going to...
Yeah.
Can I say one thing? I do love Columbo. But when I used to watch Columbo, I did used to think, bloody hell, if I'd been the murderer, I mean, I'd have found him so irritating. Don't you think? I'd sometimes think, bloody hell, you're irritating. Just take this from the murderer's point of view for a second. Because the murderer, normally I'd feel quite sorry for the murderer in those ones. Because the murderer is just some guy, he's got a boat often, isn't he? He's got a boat and he's trying to, he's got it all sorted out.
And then one thing leads to another. Yeah, he's got like a buying a boat without murdering someone.
It's not going to happen, be real. It costs a lot of money, a boat. And you're going to have to borrow, probably, aren't you? You're probably having an affair. You've got a boat. People are going to want to have affairs with you, so you're going to be having an affair. Someone's going to be blackmailing you because word gets around the boat community up and down the pier.
It's not their fault that they make boats with low railings, is it?
Exactly. Why have they got those tiny little silly railings on? It's because it's known that if you buy a boat, you're going to want to kill someone.
And push them off the side.
And therefore make it easy, push them off the side. And that's why when you buy a boat, like buying a sports car, you can do a test kill. You can take it out for a sail, and you can push the... They give you someone you can push off. He's tethered to it, so he doesn't actually die. It's a mock murder.
That was one of your jobs, wasn't it, back in the day?
Yeah.
I mean, you've done it all, of course.
Yeah, he was irritated. I found quite irritated because so you'd like him and the kind of criminal kind of duking it out.
See, I loved him. I was very fond of him.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
And his glass eye. I was quite fascinated as a small boy by his glass eye.
I once saw a stage production of Columbo.
Really?
Is that starring Face from the A-Team?
Really? As Columbo?
I didn't know Columbo. That happened.
That's a stretch.
It was fantastic.
It's a stretch. And was this in Face's heyday? Was this when was this?
No, this was probably 2008.
Face probably would have been still quite handsome at that point. The right age, maybe, but...
Yeah, he was all right. What was his
2008?
Name?
2008. I've never known his name or the guy who played Murdoch. Obviously, I know B.A. Baracus and...
Mr. T.
What's he called again?
Mr. T.
Sorry, Mr. T. Well, which one's... I always forget which way around it goes.
Doesn't Mr. matter. T is the...
Have we got a mnemonic for that?
Mr. T was the showbiz meister. B.A. Baracus was the character.
B.A. Baracus was the character who didn't like flying.
Well, he didn't say he didn't like flying. He didn't like planes.
Okay.
I think it was more to do with the food and the general vibe.
Small toilets.
The aircon, he used to pick up colds and stuff. Yeah.
Really dried his skin out.
So you'd feel sorry for the murderer just because they've got a lot of stress.
They've got a lot of stress, and this is really irritating guy who's going to get them. Ugh, so annoying. But I'm quite empathetic though, so I'll often see it from the murderer's point of view.
Especially these, because most of those murders, they've gone to an awful lot of effort, haven't they? On the whole,
exactly.
If it was any other, leading detective, it would have been the perfect murder.
And they're under stress. You don't murder if you're not in a good place when you murder someone.
I watched an amazing video on YouTube, which was a compilation of CCTV footage from inside. What do they call it when they talk to a criminal and try and get the truth?
An interview? An interrogation?
Interrogation, yeah. And this was a video that was created to teach criminology in some university. And it was times when criminals have tried to pretend to be insane, essentially.
Nice.
To get away with it.
That sounds fun.
And they basically always really over-egg it, as you can imagine.
Is that a banana on your head? Why is there a talking lizard running up and down the room? Oh, it's Pat Cash. Why is Pat Cash's face on the ceiling? That kind of thing.
It's basically that. So, the cop walks in and they're sort of like dancing on the chair and just... And basically, I think they can see through this quite quickly.
Where were you on the night of the 17th?
Then where are Napoleon's trousers? Because I haven't eaten them. Mother wasn't an egg.
So what I learned from that is if you are trying to use that as your defence, you have to go a bit more subtle.
Play it straight.
I sometimes wonder what I would do if falsely accused of a murder.
Oh, God. I'd murder my way out of it, I think.
Yeah.
So when the police arrive, murder them.
Murder them. Yeah. Use murder. Lean into it.
Oh, man. Because there aren't really Columbos, I don't think, on the whole, sadly.
No.
So I think on the whole, if the police in this country have decided that you've committed a murder and you haven't...
You're probably going down.
You're in deep shit. They're going to build it and they're going to come for you.
It's the ultimate nightmare, isn't it, that just a series of weird coincidences means that you were on the roof of a building with a...
Wielding a machete.
Wielding a machete.
And you did have a $2 million drug debt with the person. Yeah. And you did take them out on your yacht.
Yeah. And also they did bully you at school. And their head is now mounted in your front room.
Front room of your yacht.
Of your yacht. Signed.
And there's a video of you doing it.
And a video of you signing it. And you've released a single on Spotify called I Killed Barnaby Jenkins, the guy who's living at school. And it's actually doing quite well. I mean, not enough to earn money because it's just the way the Spotify algorithm works.
Ironically, you'd have to go and do a live tour to capitalise on the success of the song.
Yeah. You won't be able to do that.
There's a big question mark over that now because you're in remand.
That's right. Yeah.
You could do a kind of Johnny Cash live in the prison album, maybe.
But you'll be paid in cigarette stubs and non-stabbings. You'll mainly be paid in non-shankings. And it's very hard to convert a non-shanking into, in terms of the exchange rate between a non-shanking, but what, between one non-shanking to the pound? What is it? How many pounds do you get for one non-shanking?
Well, I think I would personally pay quite a lot of pounds for a non-shanking.
Mm. Well, that's it.
Almost all of my money.
The other way around, the exchange rate really fails you, doesn't it?
Exactly. So it converts one way a lot stronger than the other.
You can't cash that stuff out.
Yeah.
Well, you can, because you can go into Marks and Spencer's and you can say, unless you give me these trousers for free, I'm going to shank you.
And then the trouble is, you then quite often
you're
that
back
will
in
be you're
hot
back
water
in prison
all over again.
Literally back where you started. I mean, there are people that keep their non-shankings that move them to places like the Cayman Islands. But again, that means is that they're not getting shanked in the Cayman Islands like 2 or 3 million times, for example. But again, it's very hard to translate that back into actual...
And try and transfer those non-shankings back into the UK, it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Bottom line, don't get falsely accused of murder by...
Don't get falsely accused. No, but I've sometimes wondered how to behave, because I think... Because I heard a thing on a true crime thing or something about someone saying that you can be too innocent of a crime, or the fact that you're innocent. Actually, this might have been on a fictional TV show. Actually, but you know, you can be so innocent of the crime. Well, it's binary, isn't it? Generally, you're either innocent or guilty.
So, do you mean like if you go, who, me, like that to the basement?
No, being too innocent is, for example, you might just be baffled and not responding in a way which, because what you need to do is behave. What basically, if you're accused of a crime you didn't commit, okay, rather than just being innocent and just what you need to do is pretend to be innocent, even though you actually are, because if you just behave as you would, as you'd feel like behaving, you won't, that behavior won't tie in with what people, you know, police and lawyers and juries think is innocent behavior. So, for example, I might just be sat around in the interview room waiting to get interviewed. Maybe like I might guffing a few times or whatever. I might
guilty flatus.
I might draw a picture of. I might start doodling. Actually, I might start doodling pictures of noses or something, or poodles with big noses or something. I don't know anything. I might start drawing a whole load of poodles, right? Because I'm just like waiting for this absurd.
It'll be in crayon because they're not going to let you have a pencil.
Yeah, but yeah, okay, fine. And I'll be thinking, this is an absurd case. There's no way I would have killed Mike Wozniak. I actually quite liked the guy. I mean, sure, there was an on-running dispute. I mean, there was big money issues going with dividing the three bean spoils. There was some serious long-running issues there, but they were all going to get resolved in the end. But then what will happen is, in court, I'll be sitting there and they'll be like, you drew, while waiting to be interviewed, you drew over 50 poodles with Mike Wozniak's head. Poodles with moustaches. Yeah? With knives through their heads. Why did you do that? Do you see what I'm saying?
No.
Are you saying that that's... Are you saying that's what you should do or what you shouldn't do? Because that doesn't sound too innocent.
Do you remember when... Was it Amanda Knox... Amanda Knox did a handstand.
Exactly. This is exactly what I'm talking about. So yeah. Essentially, I think she was innocent. Therefore, she wasn't particularly. Her behaviour was just as random as anyone's behaviour. I mean, who knows what Mike Wozniak does when we're not looking? You know, when this turns off
after a fresh kill.
Usually
a handstand and a couple of star jumps.
Exactly.
Then he feasts on the meat and sends the bones to the necrona storage.
Get those kills working for you at the Necron Storage. Two birds and three humans in one stone.
Please stop sending animal bones.
Yeah, so what was that? Was that very innocent behaviour or not very innocent?
Well,
is that pretending?
I think it was innocent behaviour because it was random, like you know, whatever. Like random stuff people do. Whereas behave, pretending to be innocent, she should have been just sort of gnashing her teeth, going, "Why?
No, I'm your a poodles good person. One. Your no, pictures of why? Poodles. Which one was that?
The picture of the poodles.
How does that fit in? And also, did Amanda Knox do it?
Seems like you got the inside scoop. And were you on the jury?
I'm pretty sure she. Well, I think we agree she didn't do it. To most people. And I think her behaviour was, used against her by the Italian police, who needed a conviction for various political reasons. Yeah. Welcome to the Three Beans True Crime Podcast.
Finally.
True Beans.
So, Henry, if the police came to my door now and said, we think you've murdered Mike Wozniak, how am I meant to respond? Like, what? What's the best thing for me to do?
Okay, so here's what I would do. So I am blessed. I have a natural gift for acting, which means I can pretend, I can channel essentially real emotions. Not everyone can do this. I can channel essentially real emotions. So for example, if it was me, I'd go, hang on, the Mike Wozniak. Oh, Jesus, for the love of... Oh, God, oh, bloody mighty, I bloody really, really quite liked that guy. He was more than just a colleague. He was a friend. Oh, bloody, bloody Mike, why did you have to be, garrotted in that way? It's not fair. What do you mean you didn't mention garrotting?
It's over in seconds. We did also discuss the essence of fear. We went quite deep, I think. We went deep and hard. Although and
they say the essence of... Sorry.
Go on.
They say the essence of fear, of course, is anticipation.
Mm,
but right. You have already heard the episode.
Yes, that is true.
So it's like it defangs this section of fear.
They don't say that anticipation is something to do with fear. They don't.
They do.
Who says that?
Ben does.
I do. And I find it to be true.
They say anticipation is the best part, is the best bit, isn't it, of stuff.
Of ooh, fear.
It's like, you know.
Yeah, but if you were looking forward to like your execution.
You know what? This is always my favourite part. Oh. watching him getting out the big hammer, polishing it. Watching
are you telling that anticipation has got anything to do with fear?
Yeah.
That's mad.
It's not. There's a phrase to do with anticipation, but I think you got it wrong. Anticipation is... they say
it's 9/10 of the law.
No, it's the best part of valour. No, it's the mother of invention. No, they say anticipation is like pudding, for example. It's great because it's at the end of the meal, so you look forward to it. But when it comes around, it's like, I'm just eating another fucking fudge, another fucking brownie. Bollocks. But looking forward to it was good.
Yeah, but not everything is to be looked forward to, is it? So you could be at the end of the meal, you have to eat a turd. You wouldn't be thinking, oh, I can't wait for that turd. You'd be thinking, oh, no. And the fear builds.
Okay.
Or maybe, Henry, is it the anticipation of the unknown?
Oh. Well, it's fear of the unknown, isn't it? That's great. But I tell you what, I'm glad this government don't run restaurants, because if they did, I think the dessert trolley would just be a selection of different shapes and sizes of turd.
Lovely bit of satirical bookending there. And enjoy this extra chunk of the essence of fear.
It's basically the idea they can fly. It's basically like, imagine if, for me, it's like, imagine if Jeffrey Dahmer had wings.
Mm.
Is that offensive?
No, but it's too much, isn't it? It doesn't need it. There's enough of a threat already. These things don't need to be airborne as well.
So, my approach with dealing with insects, right, is what, especially on holiday, what I did with that tissue one. So what I did was I jumped out of bed, started screaming and running around in circles.
Phase one. Remember your training, Henry.
Remember the protocols. You've done this a million times in the virtual reality simulator. It can't be that different. So run around and scream. Then what I do is I can't approach the insect, because if I was to whack it with something...
It's the first blow. It's Rambo first blood. It then has all the time in the world to take the second shot, whatever way you want to look at it. Right.
Well, there's that, exactly. But also, through the act of whacking, you're therefore making contact, and it can therefore run up your arm and towards your neck. Mm. It can run up my arm and into my neck. You know what I mean?
Presumably also swelling at the same time from the blow, getting bigger with every step up your arm.
Exactly. And those eggs are birthing as it's coming up my arm. And there's a whole family of them now coming for me.
I think it is probably still true that the number one predator of the cockroach worldwide is... a heavy hardback Grisham.
Well, that's why they've got the raised lettering, Ben. Isn't it? That really helps cut through.
Yeah. That's when I travel, I always make sure I stay in hotels that have got a Gideon's Bible and a Grisham in the bedside drawer.
And that's why
Gideon's Grisham.
Gideon's Grisham.
That's why they have to be so long as well, those books, isn't it?
Mm.
Otherwise, because you try that with a Great Gatsby, you're joking.
No, you're just going to irritate it.
You're just going to irritate it. But if I can't do that, then it's... okay, so this is quite a good one I've worked out. And this is for people that are insectophobes. This might be quite useful. What you do is you get a towel, big towel, from the bathroom.
Someone else's towel, sounds like, quickly.
Ideally, yep. Someone else's towel. You chuck it over the... So you see where the insect's on the floor. You chuck the towel over that whole area. And then...
Morris dance.
Then it's time for that Morris dance training. Essentially, that's what it is. You then get on the towel and start... The way I think of it is start killing everything that's under that towel.
Mm-hmm.
So you just stamp on every single square inch of the towel. So you're never really engaging individually with the insect, if you know what I mean. You're creating a blanket...
Of death.
creating a blanket of death.
You're essentially carpet bombing it.
You're almost literally carpet bombing. You're towel bombing. and then you just stamp, and then when you're tired, you stamp some more, stamp. Then you maybe pop out to lunch, maybe visit the old town, come back later on, stamp. And it's about just keeping on stamping until nothing could have survived that. And then eventually look underneath, and hopefully you're just looking at basically some insect dust and the odd semi-recognizable leg or whatever. But
if not, out comes the lighter fuel, box of matches. Yeah.
And then set fire to myself. And
self-immolation to protest against the cockroach.
Yeah,
cockroach.
What you just had to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other one is, so for example, if there's an insect in a toilet or something that I just have to deal with, the only way I can do it is, well, normally it'll involve me standing outside the room where the toilet, standing outside that toilet or the room with the insect for between 30 minutes and an hour, psyching myself up, telling myself it's just an insect.
Seeing if there's any way that the bathroom can be fully detached from that room.
Yeah, looking for any...
Pushed off the side of the building.
Yeah, looking for any of those little hinges and stuff. Mm-hmm. If it's a bathroom / escape pod, then what I can do is I can go into a thing called, which I think of as like a sort of kill zone, where I turn into a raging... Because I can't go in and engage with the insect. I can't walk it. But what I can do is go, get a flip-flop and then go, like that. And just whack it. And it's like, Henry, you're whacking the shampoo. You're whacking the toilet. You're whacking. But I'll just whack it until again, it's just completely pulverized. That's the only way I can do it. Those two ways.
You're a full berserker.
Yeah. I imagine it's similar to, ye olde people going into battle and stuff, getting into a kind of, sort of kill state.
Crumbs.
Does that ring any bells with you guys? Or how do you...
If I saw a cockroach in a bathroom in a hotel, I would leave it there and go to bed.
Very different approach. Very different approach.
I might tomorrow have a shower with it.
Yeah.
But you just wouldn't mind.
Well, I wouldn't want to kill it.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Maybe that cockroach is going to be riding pillion on the moped as you go and see some sights the next day. Go around together. Nick a bagel from the buffet so it's got something for lunch.
Have a little summer affair, maybe. this could never work, but...
It was just a heady. It was a Mediterranean thing. Forget it. Don't think long term.
And then one day you get a phone call. You've got 5,000 children.
You know what I noticed in Acosta the other day? There's a story on the wall that goes, the story of Costa. You know that everyone has to tell you their story now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's always like, the story of this burger place, whatever, and it'll generally be two white men who've had educated to a fairly high level, did business degrees, and then decided to invest a lot of their sort of ancestral money into creating a sort of basically a vanity project of a business.
With Costa, is it like... Dreamt up by two men in a meeting room in Monsanto headquarters.
Well, yeah, because they were worried because one of them had a stepson who had quite a dodgy criminal record, who's worried about his employment prospects.
So need to set him up with a business that he could manage day to day.
Essentially money laundering.
Yeah.
Have they gone with like a sort of bullshit Italian grandmother kind of story? Well,
okay, so I think what they've done is they've told this story, which it's something about like,
in the Appalachian Hills, Whiskey McGee and Cranky Jones sat upon an old rickety tub. Is that Raccoon Joe?
And no, what they've done is they seem to have told a story which, on first reading, it's like the Costa. It sort of feels like the Costa brothers. The Costa brothers love coffee. They came to London. They had a dream of.
They dreamt of Korean noodles.
But on a cursory reading, a sort of skim read that a lot of people might do in a Costa, it kind of feels like, oh, it must have been some Italian brothers who loved coffee came to the UK and thought they'd spread lovely Italian coffee around. Oh, that's a lovely story. But that's a skim reading for an average Costa customer. Mm-hmm. But I'm someone, I do deep reading, yeah? I'm a textual analyzer, aren't I? I've done a deep read on that stuff.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I've reread it. I mean, yeah.
Have you read between the lines or just?
I've read between the lines.
You've proofread it, haven't you?
Just to the left of the lines, I've proofread it. And actually in it, it's also compatible with a story that two British brothers who decided to start a business for, you know, just selling coffee. Because it never says, well, who are the Costa brothers? You know, you assume they're Italian, but actually I don't think they are Italian. It's just, they just say the Costa brothers. Who are the Costa? I mean, anyone, you know, we're the three Bean brothers if we want, aren't we? We're the Bean brothers. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Also, because there are photos of old Italian men.
That you suspect are not necessarily related.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's all like, hang on a minute. But they've not actually, I don't think there is an Italian story about anything Italian at all.
What does it say, growing up on the streets of Surbiton?
No, it doesn't.
No.
Well, it doesn't say that either, but...
You've picked quite a bear to poke there, Henry.
I know. I've poked a bear that's very, very close to home. I've poked the hand that feeds me Korean noodles. Anyway.
The paw.
I've just looked it up.
Yeah, go on.
The Costa Coffee brand was started by a man called Sergio Costa.
Oh, fuck. All right. Scrub all that then.
But?
Born name, Sean McCluskey.
The first one was in Dunstable in Bedfordshire.
Okay.
Well, that's where the headquarters are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Coca-Cola acquired Costa from the parent company Whitbread PLC for $5.1 billion.
Oh, it warms your cockles, 2019. Doesn't it? Oh, that
takes you back to that Tuscan summer.
Every business story ends with that. Coca-Cola bought them in 2020. And it always, I mean,
from Whitbread PLC.
From Whitbread PLC. So, Ben, with the Three Bean franchise, are you at the Whitbread stage yet, or the Coca-Cola stage? Are Whitbread sniffing around?
We've just been bought by the state of Qatar.
Okay, no, that's the other way to go. Yeah, that's the good way to do it. It was either then Warburtons, wasn't it? It was Qatar or Warburtons. Is it Warburtons? I've never known
to say that. Warburtons being using Qatar as an agent of Warburtons.
Yeah.
It was a proxy. Very similar human rights record, Warburtons and Qatar.
Yeah.
We probably can't say that, can we? In public, can we?
No.
Accuse Warburtons of doing that?
In case they...
Well, we're not saying Warburtons, that's the thing. So I think in court we'd have to say...
In case
they
declare war upon us.
This is war. Total war.
Genuinely, Warburtons, that is one of those words where
very easy to say.
I've been reading it my whole life on loaves, reading it my whole life, but I only had to say it for the first time ever a couple of years ago in a meeting
when you were pitching for the account.
What is this? Is this one of your LA lunchtime meetings?
It was a lunch meeting in the sense
that
I was
pitching the Warburtons biopic.
Or were you doing the voiceover for their TV advert?
Are you going to get Tom Hanks to play a whole meal?
Henry, this is all really good, but it's the way you're saying the brand name. There's something about it.
Yeah, I was pitching for the account. Mm-hmm.
It was in my advertising days. I was pitching for the account. And they were like, Henry, we're so pleased to meet you. You know, you've based this entire pitch on loving our product, knowing our product. Tell us more. I went, yeah, the fact is I've just always loved Warburton. Warburtons. And they walked out. No, I said Warburtons. And it was one of those things. Have you ever had that where you say something and everyone sort of just sort of, you know, everyone started laughing at me? I had no idea.
I've done that, but never with a word so simple to pronounce as Warburton.
For me, it's just, it will always be Warburtons. It's weird that. Do you have anything like that? Any words that you just get wrong all the time? You just can't retrain yourself.
I'm not sure how you meant to say detritus.
Mm. I think you nailed it.
Yeah. I think for years, though, I said detritus, and that was my one. But I think I've got it now. I think it's because there's a character in Terry Pratchett's novels who's called detritus, I think.
Oh, really?
But when you read, it's that thing of when you've only ever read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like with Harry Potter, loads of people thought she was called Hermione.
Hermione's a classic.
Yeah.
Hermione a classic? You know, the one I had was, for my interview for university, I talked about my favourite book, which was The Great Gatsby. Quite original. This is an interesting, interesting guy. Wow. A bit different. Great Gatsby, eh?
Oh, he's gone off road with his choice.
American literature extraordinary. He must have.
I feel like
he must have completed the British canon and moved on.
And moved on to the very, very to the incredibly short novel by. I wonder why
you can read
in
a couple of hours.
It's almost a novella. He must have battled his way through the entire. The canon of greats, not just Dickens, but you know, Fielding. He must have read Vanity Fair, the absolute tomes. I mean, how could a
original Beowulf?
The original Beowulf, maybe even the French Beowulf. Beowulf. But he's already moved on to novellas. Incredible. So there's a character in it called Buchanan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd never said it.
Oh, no.
And I thought it was called Buchanan. And this was in an interview. And I'd claimed to love the book and stuff. And and the guys had to go, you know, you mean Buchanan? I went, what? Oh. But I kept on saying Buchanan the whole interview because I just couldn't retrain myself in time.
And you're thinking, just concentrate on the other characters. Let's talk about Daisy.
In the Griat Gaat by.
Maybe they thought you were speaking in old English.
This guy's amazing. He's so into.
He can speak Chaucerian English fluently.
He reads 20th century American literature through an old English lens. That's
My sister had Municipal for Municipal. I, to my great shame, now had for Espionage, Espionage, which I think I still prefer.
Oh, Espionage. That is better.
Espionage.
Espionage.
It's a good name for a fragrance, isn't it?
Espionage. Espionage by Mike Wozniak. I tell you what, one thing I will say about Warburtons, they do a surprisingly good bagel.
It's too late, Henry. They're not getting back in touch.
They're not getting back in touch.
You burned that bridge.
Okay, that's your extra beans. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for subscribing on Patreon. Thank you very much. See you next time.
Cheerio.
Bye.